What's up, my kings and queens and all in between? It's Andrew Velasquez with another episode of Mindful Artist Podcast. Thank you so much for being here today. I have such a special guest that I've been wanting to have on the podcast for such a long time. It's my birthday, and so this is a very special episode. But before I get into that and who this special guest is, some of you might recognize him already, but I wanted to ask you a favor. Since it's my birthday, if you could do me a big, big, solid gift and go to the podcast reviews, leave us some stars, share this with somebody that you love, that you know will resonate with. And that song you just heard, Mi Corazón, written by myself, produced by Aaron McLendon, you can download wherever you stream your favorite music. And just give us that thumbs up so we can most likely be in someone's algorithms and it'll most likely pop up and be able to share with others, creatives like yourself. Also, if you're a creative entrepreneur that balances spirituality while being in business, you can email me at mindfulartistpodcast@gmail.com to be a guest, or if you know someone as well. So today, as you can see, I have a very handsome individual. Yes, I have my husband, Johnny Debut, you guys. Let's give him a round of applause. I'm so excited. So who is Johnny Debut? Johnny Debut is a former casting manager and agent in the film and television industry. He has a degree in interdisciplinary collaborations from California Institute of the Arts. Johnny has found a way to utilize his past skills and incorporate them into a successful career in fitness. Johnny Debut is a certified indoor cycling instructor for almost 18 years, making multiple years on class past top 20. He is the owner of Debut Industries personal training, you guys. Debut Industries online training and live sessions as a national trainer serving multiple states as well as Mexico. His unique approach to fitness has landed him with multiple celebrity clientele, as well as Adidas in-house corporate training. He has helped shape many group fit instructors in the Southern California area, as well as been a consultant to many big box gym group fitness programs. In 2016, he was headhunted by Equinox Gym Southern California as a lead group fit instructor until 2022, when he moved to Florida with myself. And you can currently find Johnny Debut online or at the brand new Crunch in Gym Winter Garden, Florida. You guys, let's give it up for Johnny Debut. Say hello.
I'm sweating after all of that.
It's a good bio. It's a well-earned bio. It's fitting.
It's weird hearing yourself in a business sense.
Well, I'm very proud of you. I really am. We've been together for 14 years, going to be married 10 years, May 16th, which is right around the corner. And I'm just so proud of you, everything you have accomplished.
Thank you.
Since I've known you in my 20s and then in my 30s and now in my 40s.
I'm proud of you too for growing up.
Yeah, it kind of happens. It kind of happens. So why I think Johnny Debut is a perfect guest for Mindful Artist Podcast for so many reasons, because he is that light of inspiration to his clientele. I have personally seen the testimonies of their evolution and their growth and their transformation, really, to see them come in maybe a little bit lost, a little bit unsure of who they are. And through his therapy, through his coaching, through his nutritional advice, they flourish. And for some reason, about 90% of the female clientele ends up pregnant. I'm like, what's going on there? But before we go into like all that, I love your story so much. I know I talk about you. I'm obsessed with my husband, clearly. I talk about your story often because it's really inspiring on so many levels, as far as your origins, like how you were conceived, how you were raised, and the loving family of Patricia and Ralph, who my in-laws that I adore so much. And I feel like that's shaped a little bit of your essence and your adulthood and who Johnny Debut is now. You don't got to go into too much detail, but whatever you want to share, because I'm an
open book. I always have been.
I feel like that helps other creatives kind of figure out and find themselves too, because you're exactly that. You're the representation of living authenticity, finding who they are, even through like struggles, and then blossoming and triumphing through. So tell us a little bit about the origins and the
Well, first off, like what you said about like living your authentic self, sometimes part of living your authentic self, especially as LGBTQIA, we call it queer now. When I was young, we didn't call it queer. That was a derogatory term, but we've somehow taken that back. living in a queer world, we're not always living our true authentic self, which in turn kind of becomes our true authentic self, which is why we have community, so they understand like why we code switch and why we do certain things for that. I'm actually a really private person, but I'll tell everybody that I trust, or, you know, I really don't care. I think that's kind of living in your authentic self. So if I say something about myself, I just don't care. I don't care what other people think. I don't care what, you know, I do care what certain people think, like you. But they're not paying my bills. You know, you do pay part of my bills. So I care about, like, you know, very certain people, my parents' opinion. I still call mom and dad for mom and dad advice, even if it's totally out of their wheelhouse. You know, I do care about what a lot of people think. But at the end of the day, I think true authenticity is when you just say what you feel. And sometimes that means not saying what you feel in order to protect a certain situation. Mm-hmm. So you do have to kind of code switch a certain way, you know, depending. And I think it's maybe because I was raised at the tail end of AIDS, HIV. Yeah. We lost, I have a lot of friends that we've lost, you know, in our whole group of friends growing up. Yeah. So we knew when to bring certain things up, when not to bring certain things up. So we do carry that sort of code switching type of thing. That isn't, in my opinion, authenticity, but for somehow it's become our cultural mm-hmm. authenticity, if that makes sense. 100%. It's kind of like two different sides of the coin that we've kind of adopted into our own personalities, which is what makes being queer kind of great. You know, it's kind of our own secret languages here and there. Yeah. But in terms of what you're talking about, origin, like where I'm from, like my birth and everything.
Whatever you want to share. I just it's going to connect with people.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little adopted kid with two amazing parents who are my parents. As far as I'm concerned, they birthed me through and through. From Sacramento, California. Actually, it's a little town east of Sacramento called Auburn. Mm-hmm. I call it a little shit-kicking town. I don't know if we're allowed to cuss on here.
Yes.
I have a potty mile, so it's going to come out no matter what. I was raised in this town called Auburn, very white, very suburban. Actually, I'll say all classes. I won't even say lower middle class, because we had the rich and we had the poor.
Yeah.
And there were a few of us in between, I think, that kind of lived that middle line. And that was my parents. And so I was raised very white suburban. And I knew
it. So I call it my Valley girl.
Yeah, I was raised literally in the Sacramento Valley. I got out of school. I hated school, everything about it. I didn't early in the morning. So I got out of school at a very early age, at about 16. Mm-hmm. I left high school with the intention of going to junior college, which I did with a clear path. I decided I want to go to California Institute of the Arts. It's the only school I wanted to apply for. So I applied for it. I got in, got in a year later after being out of high school. And I started my journey at CalArts. I started as a theater major, ended up staying within the theater school, but also working for the music school, graduating with a focus on interdisciplinary collaboration, which I almost got kicked out for.
Yeah.
It's when you carry dual majors, kind of worked with all the mediums, all the departments. So if there was a degree for being a manager or
almost a production, like a creative assistant, director.
Yeah, creative direction, even like movie critics, mm-hmm. that type of stuff, I would necessarily fall under that category. Not so much now, because I haven't been working in that field for so long, but that's exactly what I did. I went on, I became Central Casting's probably youngest commercial agent on record. Mm-hmm. I was 22, sitting in pretty big production offices, working my butt off as a casting agent for Central Casting. I did that for about 2 years. Yeah. I technically started in the clothing industry as a buyer for a clothing company called Crossroads Trading Company. Mm-hmm. I started that when I was 17 years old. Before college, throughout college, I helped open up some of the stores in Southern California.
Yeah.
If you're not familiar with it, it's buy, sell, trade, consignment. It's just like Buffalo Exchange a little bit. But I was a head buyer for them and a store manager. Went right into casting, was in casting for a minute, realized that it was too much for me. I was probably only 22, 23 at the time, working 18-hour days.
Wow.
And I just wasn't ready for it. And I would call my mom crying behind a dumpster sometimes, just saying, I want to quit, because it's the only place I could sit back and
alone.
Yeah, I was alone. I was, you know, they would order us office food. And I'd just be on my way out the door, and then they'd be like, oh, you're here for another 6 hours.
Yeah.
And, you know, they just order us food. I got fat. I got depressed. I just, it was really bad. I got headhunted by another agency for talent. They brought me in a couple days a week, very low pay. It was just a way to get out. So I said, okay, that's enough to pay my rent, barely eat, choose between a few bills. And then on top of it, I picked it up. I picked up go-go dancing. So I was also doing go-go dancing in West Hollywood. So I'd make up the supplements on the weekends and go-go dance in West Hollywood at a few different bars. And then work those 2 weeks. That agency ended up taking over another agency. And then I became a head agent there. And so then I became working 9 years in that field as a head agent, 5 days a week, 7 to 3 o'clock every day.
And that was which agency? Talent.
That was with a company called Book Talent. It's still around. It works a little bit different now. But yeah, it was great. And then in the meantime, in about 2007, I took my first spin class. No, that, not even that. It was probably 2004. I took my first spin class at Gold's Gym Hollywood. Right. Fell in love with it. Fell in love. It took me about 3 times to fall in love with one teacher. She didn't play classic rock, which I loved. I like classic rock, but not in my spin class.
Not in the spin class.
And there's only so many times you can hear Don't Stop Believing.
Totally.
It just drives me nuts. That, and when I hear Red Hot Chili Peppers, I want to stab someone in the eye. Oop. It's really awful. Yeah. So, not my vibe at all. No. So it took me about 3 classes. And I was hooked and I loved it. And I think that it kind of saved my life in a lot of sort of ways, because I found moments of, oh, this is happiness, when I was realizing that thing, I wasn't happy at certain things. So I was able to like make adjustments and I said, this is what I want to go for. And I looked at my instructor, her name was Kate, and she would say things that just that I just resonated with. And I said, I have to do what you're doing. I have to.
Can I ask what she said?
She would make references to like just kind of general things about like, about this is the moment in your day when. And it would just, it would be like one interval where you're just like pushing so hard and she wants to give you that 100%. And I still use that in the way I do today.
I recognize that.
And it puts you in this place of, yeah, I can do this, but you're also high as a kite, you know?
Yeah.
My objective isn't just to get people excited in class. I want to make them high as a fucking kite.
Yeah.
Like, and when they get that high, something happens with the chemicals in your brain that allows other things to open up, whether it's realizing you're happy, unhappy. And that's exactly the class that I realized. I hate my job. I hate how I live. I hate. And so I started trying to make small changes. I started getting healthier. I started eating better things. Yeah. I would go up and down, you know, and I got really good at my job as an agent. I think because of that, I started to learn boundaries. I started to get happier with just different things. Mm-hmm. But in the end, I think it was you who told me I had to quit when you came and you rolled some calls for me one day and you were like, I had my assistant called out and I said, hey, I'll give you $200 if you come down and roll calls for 30 minutes.
Yep.
You came down. I think we were been dating maybe 6 months.
Yep. Sounds about
and I
right.
I came home and you said, you have to quit that job. You're a terrible human being.
Yeah.
And I kind of had to explain to you that it's not being terrible. It's an industry that runs a very specific way.
Yeah.
And it was like buy, sell, trade. It's very quick. It's like you pick up the phone and you're one person and you pick up the phone and you're another person, which goes back to why and how we learn to do that as code changing.
Yeah.
And it makes us good at our job. You have it. You've talked about it. Like when you go to work, you call it macting. Mm-hmm. It's not disgenuine. It's just
style stepping.
Yeah. It's what you're doing for the moment, how you have to talk to people. Mm-hmm. You know, I think a lot of minorities do it.
Yeah.
I think like we can all kind of relate to it. You know,
absolutely. Definitely a couple of takeaways. Forge, thank you for sharing and being vulnerable about that. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what I'm talking about, is like being just unapologetically yourself and not giving a fuck about what other people are going to think about you. And you're going to just make the decisions based off of what brings you joy, what makes you feel happy and good at that moment. So, I mean, even taking a risk as far as being like a go-go dancer, being as vulnerable as that and exposing yourself and using that art as a way to like express yourself, but also kind of feel liberated and make an income and then use that platform to move forward to get to the next level. So I do feel, because I love hearing the stories about CalArts and how underground that like experience was and raw.
And it wasn't, nothing was, it wasn't,
there were no rules.
There was no social media either.
Correct.
So we could get away with just anything. We could do drugs. We can do, you know, and nobody had to record it. We had art openings that just were just different cultures coming together, just getting drunk and discussing stupid things and just, you know, which at the time was stupid, but like, it's now you look back and you're like, wow, we were really changing the world at that time, you know, and it kind of opened up your eyes, which is why, like, I get nervous when people say, I'm not going to college. I think to myself, okay, what are you going to do? Are you going to travel? Are you going to do this?
Yeah.
How are you going to educate yourself on the world as it works, you know, not just like the hometown you grew up in, going to go get that, like, you know, meeting different cultures, meeting different, you know, people that you might not agree with, you know, and understanding that. I was the first gay for so many people at my college, you know. They're like, wow, you're gay? It's like, wow, I've never met a gay.
What is that?
You're like, what? That's so weird, you know, like, so
you're gonna
like,
poop rainbow now?
It's like, so they're totally, you know, and you know, the like what is considered now the quote unquote insulting questions, you know, I'm so used to it because that was my generation. So it's, you have to meet people like that. And I got to meet people like that.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't until I was older that I realized that, it wasn't until I moved out of CalArts and moved into a neighborhood probably about 10 years ago that I realized I don't have as many Black friends as I used to have.
Yeah.
You know, you forget, like, you come together as a cultural, you know, group and you learn all about the liberal arts and stuff. And
CalArts,
and you
that?
Discuss it and you discuss, like, all these things. And then all of a sudden you go out into the real world and you're pushed back into your corners.
Right.
You know, you're pushed back into your demographics. And that's a kind of scary thing.
So, yeah. No, the human experience is supposed to explore and is supposed to have diversity and just different walks of life that are going to walk past your journey and intercross with each other's energy. Then I went to fashion school and cosmetology school, but MAC Cosmetics, all my 20s was basically my CalArts, as you explained it. And I'm very grateful for that because it shaped a lot of, I think, my adulthood and my finding myself. And I feel that CalArts was that for you.
Probably more so because you could fail a lot harder than we could. You know, like, we could do drugs all night and miss the next day of school. And we'd still have a roof over our head.
I mean, I don't know.
You know, but the thing is that we also couldn't, like, we didn't have to pay our bills. We just had to go to school. You know, I mean, we were a cutthroat program, but we did it somehow. Like, we did it. We'd party till 4 a.m., wake up at 7, and have 15 hours of school, you know?
Essentially, you guys were kind of the first influencers to influence one another.
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how lucrative it would have been, you know? I don't know how, you know?
Well, I mean,
some people went off and did their own thing, and some people did really good. And
you call yourself the 12, and out of those 12, there has been some really successful...
Oh, super successful. I won't
entrepreneurs.
Talk about I won't talk about online, but we had 50 people in our class and we graduated with 12.
Exactly.
Because of the cut program.
That says a lot.
And because of how intense the program was.
That says a lot.
It does. I mean, I almost got cut at the end for doing a dual major. So, which is ridiculous because it was a dual major. So it made no sense. But like, I'm super grateful for it. And I'm super grateful for that type of education that pushed in. My mom used to always make this joke where, because I wasn't on Broadway or I wasn't, you know,
that was the ultimate dream.
It was like, she thought, oh my gosh, what a waste, you know? And then she came to my very first spin class.
Oh, Patricia.
And then she sat in that back row and the whole time, that's my son up there, you know? And she got really excited and made me proud. It made me proud of, like, when she got to see, oh, like, you know, these things did pile onto my education. Absolutely went into me being an agent.
Yes.
It absolutely went into me being into, like a casting agent and then to a talent agent and then figuring out that road about where I want to be in the industry. Cause I thought I was going to rule Hollywood.
Yeah.
But
I mean, in a sense you did in your way and I agree.
And
I agree with everything you're saying. CalArts was a part of the exploration of finding who you were supposed to be and who you are really. And then be expressive and then through the casting agency and being a manager there, where I was able to like witness the different sides of your acting skills. And that's when I
but
was
it
like,
it was genuine to that point.
I'm
I mean, that's like what, you know, it's,
but it was very cutthroat. It was very cutthroat.
It was. You talk to people a certain way. Andrew specifically, I think, is talking about the fact that I talked to a casting director a certain way and I talked to an actor in a different way.
Yeah.
And I had 300 some odd clients doing what I did. And sometimes you have to be like, here's the rules. Here's Papa Bear talking right now. When yeah. you are calling me constantly at 300 clients, I don't have time to go find you work.
Yeah.
So please don't tie up my lines. These are black and white issues.
Yeah.
I just always say this thing, you would get so mad. And to be honest, I still live by it. There's that saying, there's no such thing as a stupid question.
Yeah.
There are so many stupid questions in the world that all you have to do is Google it. Just Google it, get online.
Yeah.
If it's there, that's your answer for the moment.
I mean, he's not wrong.
Do not tie up my lines. Do not waste my time with a stupid question that can simply educate yourself. I do it all the time. I did it twice in the shower today on my phone.
Yeah.
Something came to my brain and I picked up my phone and Googled it real quick. Yeah. I was like, I'm going to investigate that.
What's
more.
Really going on?
Oh yeah, because I listen to like my music. And I always have clients when I'm like getting into the shower and getting into that, like, getting ready for work. So I always have it close to me, but like I Google things all the time.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, be careful about your health. Be careful about Googling your health all the time. That should definitely be going to a doctor. But I kind of live by that rule. So I'm trying to, you know, I try to like, you know, even if I get
do the research
like, weird, and if I get in weird situations where like, did I just piss somebody off? Could I just answer that myself? I definitely question myself, you know, I have that same responsibility. It's not,
I love that.
It's not, honest. You know, it's not good. Just, no, I have to remind myself all the time. I mean, even a little last night, I told everybody, do not leave this workout into the cold weather with your muscles too stretched out. Slowly warm your body back up. And what did I do? I like stripped down and walked outside and I walked out and my muscles froze.
Yeah.
So I have to, you always have to remember to take your own advice.
It is very cold out here right now. No, I think it's great. It's, I'm very proud of all that. I'm proud that I was a part of it. I'm proud that I witnessed it and seen your evolution and the transformation happen from being a casting manager to a super successful personal trainer. I'm glad that I was able to give some input and insight and say like, hey, I see your passion over here. Why don't you try this out? I can help you out over here.
And we tried a couple of things too. Mm-hmm. You know, we tried the D gloves, you know, which is an apparel situation.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a few failed businesses.
Yeah.
I won't go into them because some of them involve partners and stuff, but like I've had probably
it's part of taking the risks.
So. I had three failed business attempts throughout my life.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe four if you count one from this year. But you said it one time. You said, well, why are you trying to invest in someone else with something? Why can't it just be you?
Right.
And it never occurred to me that my time has that value.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people kept asking me that, but it took me those two correlations being, yeah, I could do that. So I just did it little by little. What I thought was going to be a slow process on getting rid of being in the entertainment industry and transfer over to debut industries full time, I think it happened in 4 months.
Yeah, it's incredible.
I think within 4 months, I went from 3 clients to like 15.
Yeah, I remember those days.
And I remember sitting, I'll never forget, I was sitting there with a pen and paper, looking at how much I was making. And then I said, I started to take on like my first or two clients. And then I wrote down, okay, if I had 11 clients, this is how much I could make.
Yeah,
and I passed the paper across from Andrew. I was like, can you believe I could make that much in a month? I mean, I think before we left LA, I had 27 clients. So it was like that success was, I mean, granted, we lived in LA, so it wasn't like success is measured. Financial success is measured very different. But it was a big growth. Successful. It was something super proud, you know. And before we moved here, I was able to do my resume for the first time because I thought I'll just have my resume in my back pocket.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to do my first resume since I was like 21.
Yeah, and it was legit.
And I was like, oh, look at me go.
Yeah,
you know. So it's like I was proud of that growth.
Yeah, as you should be.
But I mean, it takes a lot. You got to put a lot of work in.
Blood, tears, sweat, mm-hmm. support, community, efforts, and just resilience. Like never mm-hmm. quitting, never giving up. I wanted to ask what advice or tips do you have for other aspiring entrepreneurs looking to incorporate more spiritual work or creativity into their craft?
Well, I think it depends on what you do. Mm-hmm. I think that there's a, you know, I mean, it really comes down to what you do. I mean, the spirituality part is probably on most types of businesses going to be just on your own personal end because you want to be careful about playing with that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. When it comes to spirituality, you want to detract any customers. It's different
for each individual.
Like so I guess it really comes down to like what you want to do. I think for you, because you're more creative, you're going to be around more creative types. So they're mm-hmm. going to expect more spiritual talk, that type of stuff, especially mm-hmm. with me, more spiritual talk. I don't talk a lot of spiritual stuff. I kind of think that I like to talk about it black and white, but we all live in the gray area. Mm-hmm. This is black, this is white. Let's just live in the gray area because that's really how it is. That's the problem, I think, in the fitness world is that you watch all these Instagrams and TikToks and you're like, that's what I need to do. Or those stupid things that say, don't do this, do this. No, do it all. Do it all. And whatever works for you, do it all. Unless it's something that's actually dangerous that they're trying to point out. You get to create that story for yourself. You get to create your fitness journey. There's some facts that you have to go through. There's some real things. And that's when you hit a personal trainer or somebody who can help you nutritional, physical, if you're getting over something. You know, I've had a lot of clients. I love CrossFit because it hurts people so much. And then they come to me, including myself.
Yeah.
And then I have to rehabilitate them. I've had some brought people in. Oh, probably about 20% of my clients have come from, CrossFit injuries. Mm-hmm. So we have to rehabilitate them back into that same style of work, just done without a timer, just done without something that's going to throw them over, but still give them that sense of.
Yeah. Well, you're the first one that I finally understood that it doesn't have to be about mass and the heavy lifting all the time or eating this amount of calories to just be like big. I associate it with being larger to being healthier, but it's not. It's actually.
Well, I think there's a real problem with men.
Yeah.
I think there's a problem with men associating size with masculinity.
Right. Or mass.
Or, I mean, go watch that show 100 on, was it on Hulu or Netflix or whatever. And it shows all these different types of athletes and it comes in all different forms of body.
Sure.
Like there are people that can hold themselves up for hours. There are people who can do, I had a very big muscular guy who had never done any type of work ever metabolically.
Yeah.
Came into my class.
And that's my favorite type.
Came into my class and had a heart attack.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and it like that was also because he was on steroids. All of these things. And yeah, he looked great. He looked amazing. Does that necessarily mean he was healthy?
Right.
No, that wasn't that situation. And God bless that guy. He's fine.
Is he okay now?
He's totally fine. He was actually coming off of it. He was coming off of it. And that was one of the side effects. Now he had been fully on it. Like, I don't know what I would have done.
His heart couldn't take
it. You know, his heart couldn't take it. He lived through it. But how you define fitness and health, I think is a very personal thing. Mm-hmm. And some people just want to feel good. Some people want to look good, which means you have to take a different type of approach. But no matter what type of approach you're going to take, it always starts from inside.
Yeah.
Because we're a microwave. Everything's going to start from inside. The heat, all of it starts with your metabolic rate.
Yeah.
We have to lift heavy. We have to inquire metabolic workouts. We have to do certain things in order to keep us moving. But what those things are for you can be so much.
Right. Yeah. And I fell in love with your philosophy. Also, the relationships that your clientele or the individual has with food and their self-care and their how they view and look at themselves in the mirror and what, you know, really their self-esteem. And so I love that you, and I learned that from you, that I had to really like look at myself and heal, little Andrew that had been broken before, to love myself, to know that I am worthy of that type of, you know, fitness and that lifestyle and that workout that's going to make me feel my most healthy self.
It's about how you
so
feel.
So it is mental health.
And what you feel is also what you exude. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's so funny, especially in the gay community. You have all these like hot bodied guys that like these big, thick bears, you know? Like, it's so funny that you know, all these hot bodied guys like these. It was like, you know, there's some type of cross paths thing, and it's fine with whatever aesthetic you want.
Right.
But somewhere down the line, and I think that's kind of what's changing right now, is somewhere down the line, someone said, only these people along with these people, only these people along with people. You're not fit unless you look like this. And a lot of what you see out there that's fit is also kind of unhealthy and most of all, temporary.
So it's a quick fix.
When you look, you can be in it for a long time, but like 45-year-olds that compare themselves to 20-year-olds.
Longevity, right.
You know, like you can't compare yourself to a 20-year-old. Mm-hmm. My body doesn't look like a 20-year-old because I'm not 20, I'm 45. Right. You know, like it won't be that. But if I can compare it to my body to how I felt yesterday, I will always be able to do that because that's only my own comparison. So I think that that's what happens is that people have these images on social media, in the news media. And I was a casting director. I'm partly to blame for that. You know, So we hold ourselves up to these standards that are a lot of times very, very unhealthy. Yeah. And
so what's your take on that? How do you advise, if I'm your client and I'm comparing myself to like all these ripped bodies like you're describing?
I would shut it down really quick. And I would, and not shut it down in a negative way. That's why I don't really care about the comparisons that you would want. I would say, what makes you happy? What is the ultimate one thing that you want?
Yeah.
Like out of anything physically and emotionally. And how can we bring those two things together? We'd have to look at your regular life. Do you like your job?
There you go.
What's your family life? Like, do you know how many people I've trained that just, you know, after like 6 months, they're just like, I realize I hate my life. I hate everything about it. I hate where I live. I don't think I'm in a healthy marriage. I think that, you know, or whatever relationship they're in. I never dealt, you know, it's been, I've had people before where like 4 months comes around and you're like, my grandpa touched me. Yep. You know, the real stuff starts to come out. That's the stuff that makes you unhealthy. That's the stuff that you carry on your back all day, every day, and you don't let go. So
there's the traumas that we store.
Yeah, I guess it's the traumas. It's, you know, and, but here's the thing. And, you know, I've said this to you guys before, like when you guys are talking about traumas and stuff, some people don't need to talk about their traumas. Like some people just need to work it out. Right. Yeah. Some people need therapy. Some people don't need therapy. Some people are really good at working with their own traumas. It's naturally built into them.
As long as it's released at some degree and it's purged, whatever works for the
individual. I go to Marshall's. I literally will get in the car. I'll be like, I need to be alone.
Retail therapy.
And if I say to Andrew, if I say to you, I say, I'm going to Marshall's. He don't ask me to go.
I don't.
That's me. That means that's the word for Johnny's going to work out some demons at Marshall's.
Literally.
And then I come back with lots of good deals and I love life. That's literally that. Like, if that's how I learned to healthily deal with like an emotion or me feeling overreactive about something, it brings me back to a safe space.
Yeah.
I think it's because there's also people who don't need to revisit trauma on a daily basis or a weekly basis.
It's probably not helping like that.
You know, like,
that really leads me into the next question. I was our favorite queen. She always says, how are you going to love somebody else if you can't love your damn self, right? So for Johnny debut, what's your self-care beauty regimen? What's your, you talked about retail therapy, so that's one. But do you take time selfishly for yourself and before you are service to others? And what does that entail?
Oh, man, that's literally what I preach. I mean, I preach it in my classes and everything that tell everybody, you know, before I have rules in my class. When this class starts, you know, let's say it's an indoor cycling class. One, you always ride with resistance. Two, you respect your fellow teammates. That means no cell phones, no chit chat. Mm-hmm. If you can talk, if you can be on your phone, you're not working hard enough and you're also being rude. So go outside if you need to do this.
That means they're not present.
That goes for every class. If you walk into class late and you don't know how to set something up or you're, excuse me. And then you get on your phone. You're the worst. Like, I would kick you out of my gym. I would kick you out so quick.
Yeah.
And then my third one, whatever you got going there, going on at home in your relationships, your job, because we all have it, stops at the door. Because the only reason that we are there is to deal with that.
Yeah.
Because that is what's making it. So we have to completely go in and reset all of those things. Depending on what type of classes, that's the outlet, where that's the medium we're using in order to do it, whether it's prayer, meditation, yoga, indoor cycling, weightlifting. These are all things that are a form of meditation that will reset you to be able to go out. And why do we call it training? You're not going to the Olympics.
Right.
You know?
Unless they want to.
I mean, you can if you want to, but then you're going to be there 9 hours a day.
Right.
Like, you're going in for an hour to train. So what are you training for?
Yeah.
Every day, every single day you wake up, you're training to sleep be better, to drink more water, to give more appreciation to the temple that you have, because it just carries, you know.
I love that.
And then got a house.
Good. Okay, cool. So what practices or routines do you have in place to nurture your spirituality, your fitness, passion while running your business too?
I don't know. I like, it's not necessarily that I put anything in place. I think I'm very fortunate because I don't have kids.
We do. There's one right here.
I say that in the nicest of ways. Come here, Papa. I say that in the nicest of ways because I don't have to answer to anybody. I don't have to wake up to anybody. I don't have those types of responsibilities. I have my dogs, but they're old and they know yeah. what we're doing. And so I always have myself, I think, spiritually grounded. And when I don't, yeah. I recognize it and I'm able to talk about it.
Yeah.
When I'm mad, I'm mad. When I like am playful, I'm playful.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say I wear my heart on my sleeve because I don't always do that. But like at home, at least it's a sanctuary. You mm-hmm. know, I love coming home at night and being able to put my feet up. I create boundaries, and creating boundaries, I think, creates that safe space for my mental space. There's things I don't do. There's things I don't want to do. I'm not interested in doing them. Go off. You can do it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
He knows that he can go off and go. I mean, we vacation separately sometimes. Check. Because,
which is healthy couples.
Yeah.
So that actually leads me into my next question. Let's share some tips and advice for couples and maybe what's helped.
I didn't see that one coming.
What's helped us and what we, so I'll let you go first and then I can share after.
Well, I guess it kind of changes with each stage that you're in. Mm-hmm. My biggest thing was, and you know, I think we learned this one together, is never tell somebody how they're supposed to feel. And I don't even think that's just a relationship thing. I think that's just
all relationships. Yeah.
Like that phrase, well, you shouldn't feel like that, or that's not what that meant, you right. know, or all those things that, you know, that's a dick thing to say,
mm-hmm.
you know, because you're unvalidating the way someone feels, especially when they come to you specifically, mm-hmm. or when they're saying, you know, they're telling you about something. It's good to like say, do you want me to be a shoulder, or is this a shoulder moment, or is this you need back and forth moment?
Yeah.
Do you need me to be the opposite, or do you need to, you know, those lines of communication, and not telling somebody, you know, well, you're wrong because this isn't validated.
Correct.
It makes you feel in fucking sane.
Yeah.
And every
so you can't...
every person that I know. I mean, everyone's been in that position, especially mm-hmm. in a relationship. Mm-hmm. Like, well, that's not what I meant.
Right.
It's like, well, that's how it sounds. You know, it could be a different type of conversation, you know? Yeah. So when you start to recognize those and to learn to walk to the wall, say, hey, let's recoup.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. I think that you had the problem with that one.
Yeah. That's actually what I was going to say next. I'm a fixer. I'm a problem solver. I want to get to the bottom of it. But through our relationship, I've learned that sometimes you just can't, there is no solution at the moment, and having a little bit of air to breathe to revisit later when you have a time to reflect is healthy. And we even came up with a code early on where it's like, are you sensey? Does that mean, oh, you're feeling a little bit of sensitivity at the moment, and we just need to be a partner of support and not
mm-hmm.
be a judgment-free
it's kind of like a call off, like mm-hmm. red flag or white flag, I guess they say, like yeah. white flag.
And it's valid.
It just validated. Tells the other person it's time to back up.
Come here, Papash. Look, kids want to be here. Look at my baby, my Papash. But no, this, you're awesome. This is great. I wanted you here because you're my partner of life, and it's my birthday, and I'm so grateful to have been with you for 14 plus years, and celebrate our 10-year wedding anniversary right around the corner.
Oh, he's so, as you see who the lover is and who's not the like romantic one.
But
I'm romantic in my own ways.
You are.
When he comes home, I always say he'll be like that. And I'll say, like, what did you do wrong? What did you do? Did you crash the car again?
Called love languages,
did you
crash
the car again?
Everybody has their own way of communicating. No, but seriously, you're the one partner that has made me like, I don't know, love myself more. Like, you're the first one to accept all of me and say it's okay to like be different, Andrew. It's okay to be feminine, and it's okay to be masculine, whatever you want to be. Just happy, and I'm just grateful for that. I just really want to.
And some people aren't into that, you know. Some people aren't into one specific thing or another, but that needs to be covered before you spend 10 years together. Mm-hmm. You know, like, these are my ideas here. You grow, and sometimes my ideas have changed about things.
Yeah.
And you've gone and changed things with me. I think it's just, you're willing to, even when you disagree on certain things, support them.
Yeah.
On everything. You know, my mom used to always say, like, there's two things people need. They need to, and there's one I agree with and one not that I agree with. If she's listening to
this, she's Hi, Patricia. I love you.
I did not say that. That's what she always says. I did not. That never happened. I think all of our parents do that.
Yes.
One, she says, you guys both need to be the same religion. For us, we were both raised Catholic. So mm-hmm. we understand where that comes from,
right.
why we're not Catholic anymore.
Correct.
We have nothing but respect.
Yeah.
For the most part. But we became Unitarian. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we try to get to church when we can. We don't really have one here, but we've been able to, we follow that same spiritual journey.
Yeah.
And part of being Unitarian is, you know, the idea that we have this democracy of faith. So we can practice what we want to practice. And we've been able. So on that one, I really agree, because it would be hard, I think, especially this day and age,
to not have happening the same in the world values. Right now,
like, yeah, yeah, to like find ourselves on these extremes, you know, just being in the South, you kind of see it. You know, we're definitely exposed to different things here. And then second, my mom used to always say, you need to love your husband or wife more than you love yourself. But I would like to change that, is I love myself mm-hmm. When I'm with you,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to not feeling good about myself. If that makes sense.
I love it.
So that's why, you know, because I think we get
you taught me that
we get into a lot of relationships, I think, and not just with lovers, but like with friends too,
yeah,
where
absolutely.
We like them way more than they like us.
Right.
So that's kind of like one of my big things recently, is everything is temporary, and mm-hmm. I'm only going to give you what you have given me back,
mm-hmm.
which has made it really easy to cut a lot of people out of my life.
Well, it doesn't even have to be about cutting it out. It's actually the universe just filtering it out. So it's.
I think that's age, though, too. I think age really teaches you that, because you like.
I call it wisdom.
Yeah. I mean, wish wisdom had clearer skin and like not a wisdom body.
That's why there's makeup. Like... It's all good. But all right. Well, this leads me into one of my favorite parts of the podcast. It's called Wrapping Up Mindful Cues.
Okay.
We're wrapping up Mindful Artist with rapid cues. So just wherever you're at with these questions, just intuitively answer it. Question number one, who is your hero and why?
Beyoncé.
Dang. It was like not even a second.
It's because she's followed so many different parts of my life, probably prior to you. And it's not because Beyoncé singly. It's not like one specific thing. It's because every album she's ever done has followed exactly my love. I used to have Get Me Bodied would
yeah.
come on so my set when I would go dance.
Yeah.
And that's the first time it came into me, when I was exposing myself in that kind of way, making more money than God in an hour. And then it just gave me like this confidence. And I started hearing what she was saying. And it's not about her, it's about yeah. us. She writes these anthems for us. So mm-hmm. I am constantly, and just recently, you know, I'm the one, I'm the only one. No one else can think like me. And yeah. that's a great thing for your business entrepreneurs yeah. too, is because absolutely. You are the only one. You're the only one that thinks like you. Do not do things the same way. You are your own business. And all of those things ring in my head all the time. So
yeah.
I always get to go back to Beyoncé when I need that extra moment of like, yeah, you got this. You got
I love
this.
Her.
Yeah.
She's amazing. Good, good, good. All right. That's going to be the obvious for number two. What is your favorite music album of all time and why?
Oh, that actually isn't.
Oh, okay.
I will say Homogenic is my best.
What'd you
my
call
favorite.
Me?
Homogenic.
Yeah.
Homogenic is my favorite from Bjork.
Yeah.
And I think that that's because I was in a really, really... talk about wearing your heart on your sleeve. I was in my very first relationship that I was in romantically was an abusive relationship.
Yeah.
Like super abusive. I leave out certain details because that's not for everybody to know, mm-hmm. but it did end up like very like subpoenaed by McDonald's, tried to beat up my mom. Like it was like an episode out of Cops,
yeah.
like bad boy, what you gonna do? Right. So when I was in that relationship with that year, Homogenic had come out.
Yeah.
And
that's
that
a great
album, I had considered a lot of really dark things. Never suicide, but I considered really awful things. Leaving home, you know, like what most people in abuse situations.
Yeah.
Because I was embarrassed. I didn't know. I thought I got myself into it. I thought everything was my fault. That album saved my life.
Yeah.
From beginning to end. Mm. All day, every night.
Yeah.
Like every song could relate to one emotion that I was going through within that year and a half that I was with that person.
Yeah. I do love that album.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny that that was the concert that we both experienced. Mm-hmm.
When it comes around.
Passed away.
Yeah.
All right. Last question for wrapping up Mindful Artists Rapid Cues. What is your favorite quote of all time? Could be some, a quote that you say, actually.
It's probably RuPaul. You know, they don't pay your bills, you pay them no mind.
Hey.
I think that that's kind of because that's a defense mechanism that we've always come up with.
Mm-hmm.
Especially queer from my age range, like that bracket.
Yeah.
Because you know, you have the one above us right now that's, you know, our bitter old gays, which we love. We've got a lot of bitter old friends.
We're not that far.
And then we've got, but we're bitter old gays to like the ones who are in their 20s now, you know? So there's certain words and verbology that we use or that I use that like, they're like, hey, that's not political. It's like, when you're called a faggot every single day until you're 18,
right?
You know,
you gotta grow a backbone.
You know what I mean? Like, it sucks that it happened, but you know, we were able to like reinvent ourselves because of it
and take the power back.
I would not change one thing about that. Also,
mm-hmm.
It sounds dark, but I would never change. You know, I think that that's kind of what pride is too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, pride is also being part of all of those moments that led up into the character of who you are. Like, mm-hmm. I've been beat up enough, not physically, but like, you know, when I was a kid, we used to watch, I remember watching, not Oprah, one of those talk shows about whether or not we should be allowed. No, I don't know. It was one of those shows in the afternoon.
Benny Jones?
Shut up. We were like watching one of those shows on whether or not we, as in gay people, should be allowed in public swimming pools with kids.
Mm.
And it was an open, honest discussion. On afternoon and daytime.
Yeah.
And there was a panel of gay people and doctors, and it was them against everybody.
Yeah.
And so we had to sit there as gay kids and just watch it.
And take it.
And be like, look at our parents. And our parents mm-hmm. like, I don't know about this. And, you know, so that's what we were subjected to. And you might not, it might have been awful, but that was bigotry.
Yeah.
Happening right in front of them. It was a sign of the times. But that stuff made us stronger.
Yeah.
It made us be able to like become entrepreneurs. I think that that's why so many, you know, queer people our age are associated with, you know, especially if we don't have kids, associated with an extra income, with more money, being more successful. You know, statistics have shown a lot of that type of stuff. Yeah. So
it's the resiliency. It's being able to adapt to your surroundings.
It's about being alone. I think that we learn to be alone at a younger mm-hmm. age and mm-hmm. being able to be cool with being alone.
And being creative with developing community wherever you go.
Oh, yeah.
And that's also why I wanted to have you on here, because we have done that. And I'm super grateful for mm-hmm. this big risk of moving across the country. I honestly would not have done it without you. And to come here and be vulnerable and almost kind of reinvent ourselves again.
I love it. I mean,
it's been a beautiful experience.
You have moments that are scary, but it's not a full reinvention, you know, because we still have taken everything that we've had in the past and just are utilizing it in a different way now.
Yeah.
Which every business needs to do at some point.
And purging. And
otherwise
that
you end up like 24-hour fitness with green machines, you know?
And purging a lot of stuff that we maybe didn't materialistically did not need, where it was just being consuming to just consume. And now it opened up space and energy for other parts of us that are going to grow and expand and help others. And that's really where we're at now. We're developing more community. We're my kings and queens and all in between. I'm so grateful that I'm able to share this story with you and my dog, who's making a lot of noise right now, and my husband, Johnny Debut, on my birthday. Where can we find you? What do you want to plug? Tell everybody where we can
plug. Well, if you're ever in Winter Garden, Florida, which is just a suburb of Orlando, I'm at Crunch Gym in Winter Garden.
It's the best class technically ever, guys.
Kissimmee, there's a new one coming to another location, I forget where, but that's where I'm teaching currently. Mm-hmm. But you can always find me online at debutindustries.com, or you can find my Instagram at Johnny Debut. It's not private. You can say, come say hi, whatever. I'm always there. I have an open line. And if you're interested in online training, I do usually carry a short wait list right now. Mm. I have a spot opening up in January. I don't know when this is going to air, your birthday.
My birthday.
So in a few days, I'll have a spot open. I generally keep a spot open here or there just because I don't like to say no to people. I do all time zones, including Europe. Right now I'm in all time zones in America and Mexico. So
amazing.
If you would like some personal training, feel free to read up my website.
In the comfort of your own home or gym, guys. Yeah,
I do remote training. And we talk about all that stuff.
So not only can you get abs, you can get eyebrows, makeup, hair in one-stop shop. You guys, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. Make sure that you follow, go to the description, Johnny Debut, and Andrew, debutindustries.com. And for everybody out there, make sure that you follow us on Instagram and Mindful Artist Podcast. If you like this episode, share it with somebody that you love, and make sure that you give us the ratings and the reviews. And that song you're about to hear, Mi Corazón, is produced by Aaron McLendon. You can download it wherever you stream your favorite music. Make sure you make an impact in someone's life, you guys. Much love and light to you all. And until the next time, I'll see you guys. Bye. See if it does a heart. Yay. Bye, guys. Love you. Bye. Love you.